On the phone, we have Purna Prajna Bangare from Lawrence, Kansas, who not only happens to be an excellent musician, but also professor of mathematics at KU. And this is a conversation ahead of an upcoming performance at the Lead Center in Lawrence on October 28th as part of an ensemble, which is going to feature a few different musicians, one of whom is actually a KKFI host himself, and a few other famous and well-known musicians that are going to perform all together as part of the Purna Loka Ensemble. Purna, thanks for taking this time to talk to us, and we're really happy to have you back on the show again.
Always a pleasure, Niloufar.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you. So tell us a little bit, just to start off with, about the ensemble and its composition of people and instruments that are going to be featured at this performance.
So this consists of four people. David Balakrishnan, who is the director of Turtle Island String Quartet. He will be on the violin. Jeff Harshberger, KKFI host, on the bass. And Amit Kautikar from Boston on the tabla. And I'm of course, on the violin.
These are all new compositions that are going to be performed, but it's based on a collaborative effort between you and David in what you might call integration of music and geometry. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Before that, I want to point out that the first half of the program, maybe 40 minutes, I think, is just me and Amit setting the stage. It will be pure Indian classical music, actually, the first half. The second half is what will feature the ensemble. There's going to be a surprise guest, which I'm not telling. There's a small 10-minute part in which there'll be another guest that I cannot let out. But second part is the main part in a sense, because it's new music. We are featuring for the first time a composition which we have worked on for last year and a half, me and David. And the first composition is called Syzygy, that has been performed in different avatars in various places. But this will be slightly different than the other times. And the second bigger composition is this new composition called Triality. It has three movements. First movement is called Pentaloka. The second movement is called Vibration. And the third movement we have not named yet. It is that new.
Wow. Is it going to be named on the spot of the performance, or are you just going to leave it?
No, we are thinking about it. It has to be correctly named. So there are a few candidates. You have to meditate on the name. It should be correct. The first movement is Pentaloka. Penta means five. Loka means universe. It's a pentatonic structure. Variations of that. That's why it's called Pentaloka. And second movement is called Vibration. That is actually coming from geometry. Without geometric help, I would not be able to do that, because it goes deep inside the Western system and very little to do with Indian system. After all, I'm an Indian classically trained musician. So I'm not trained in Western composition, but it goes into deeper aspects of that. It is very polyphonic, where all three of us, me, Jeff, and David, will be playing in three different voices. Even though the motivation for this started more emotionally, the way it proceeded had a lot of geometric help, as I would put it.
You've talked about how music is very personal. In a sense, geometry and music are maybe who you are in a lot of ways, how you take up space is through mathematics and through music. So can you talk about how, for you personally, that connection between geometry and music was made?
That's a good question, actually. A difficult question to answer. It has to have a little background. I was deeply trained in Indian classical music by my teacher, H.K.N. Murthy, a well-known person in Mysore, India. He's well-known in South Indian music circles as a first-rate violinist and also as a very great teacher. I was one of his first students. And we belong to a school in India which is very liberal in its thought processes. The school also doesn't differentiate too much between genres. We can play pure forms of North and South Indian classical music, but there is also an integration aspect there, so that already is a stage that has been set. But then in Mysore, there is a Maharaja's palace, that used to have a lot of violinists from the West. I have heard at least several concerts there. But that is not the only thing, but I was exposed to Western classical deeply when I was a kid until late teen years. So those sounds were always in my head. And then when I came to the United States, I got introduced to blues and jazz, which had a profound effect on me. And of course, Indian classical music is very improvisational. It has its own grammar and syntax, which is quite complementary to Western system. But sometimes, while improvising, I used to go out of the system Indian system, and because I used to, it's an expressive need. And slowly I started moving a little more away from the boundaries of Indian classical music and into kind of Western. It's almost in a no man's land. But then it was literally a short period of time I realized a few years ago, 3 years ago I think, that actually geometry that I do, which is heavily influenced by a very great 20th century geometer by name Alexander Grothendieck, those methods, and more than methods, it's the viewpoint, actually is perfect framework to bring in elements from various genres and see in a more universal, unified light. And that geometric system is what is the foundation for this, actually. Without that, I would not be able to do it. It's a bit technical. I will not get into the technical aspects. Roughly speaking, it's this. Indian classical music is a key-based. You fix a key, and then you have what is known as a raga system. That is, Indian musical thought is largely concerned about space between notes, the so-called microtones, or gamakas we call. Without this, there is no Indian classical music in a strict sense. So it is a fixed key, there is no polyphony, but there is a tremendous amount of subtlety in the space between notes that comes into the play. And the Western classical, on the other hand, is more concerned with polyphony, counterpoint, moral relation, and so on. So it's kind of complementary system. There's no microtone there, except for blues, which has a particular microtone. So these are complementary systems. So if you are doing something where you have to bring in elements from each, it's not as simple. Of course, you can do fusion and ad hoc, but if you want to have a system, a framework with its own grammar and syntax, a system which is self-consistent, you need to really look at closely what is happening in these various systems and to find a technical framework on how to deal with microtones when you move away from the Indian system and bring it into the Western system. This geometry helps a lot in that.
How were you able to collaborate with David Balakrishnan, who does not have a math background? He's not a mathematician.
Well, when we are doing music, I'm not lecturing him on math. I'm only telling him. So I have a kind of a dictionary. So I have some geometric framework and models I have, but music doesn't really come from that. Music comes from intuition first. And then you don't know how to proceed, because an idea is a few ideas, but you have to have you have to build a composition. It requires step by step, bar by bar, precise, the notes, the phraseology, and so on. So even though geometry helps, even though musical intuition helps, you will get stuck you do not have any rules here. It's a new kind of music. So you don't, either you go to Indian classical or to Western classical, but then it's dragged back into those. If you want to stay in this new region, you have to really have a framework where you need to navigate there. It needs certain rules, which needs to be repetitive. I mean, you know, like in Western and Eastern system, Indian classical music, there's a system. You may do things in a same mode or a raga, you know that it's in the same mode or raga. So that kind of a system has to be developed here. So I have a kind of a dictionary, so I can read from geometry to music. And now these days it's even music to geometry, actually. But that we'll not get into that. That goes into math territory. So as far as music is concerned, so I get this translation into music, and then I discuss that with David. I will not be talking to him about geometry. He does understand, though, to some extent, intuitively, where it is coming from, actually. What is happening there? He has a certain intuition on the geometric thing since I have lectured to him on this. But he looks at the music. And even though he's a Western-trained musician, he is also deeply exposed to Indian classical music. He himself is a director of Turtle Island String Quartet. He's one of the leading jazz composers in the country. He has also experimented going east. So there is a certain confluence there between me and him.
Yeah, there's the integration, I would think.
Yeah, it can be viewed as integration by some people because they see these things, various familiar things going in and out. It can also be thought of as a completely different music. Integration has difficult words. Difficulties come into thing. What are you integrating? What are you doing? If you want to keep away from that kind of a controversy, you want to essentially see that there's a new way of doing music. If it has integrative, it has elements which integrate, that's true.
Right.
But the main idea is to produce music which is expressive and it has its own grammar and syntax. It is a kind of a genre in itself, hopefully in the future.
And so with this development, there's room for improvisation on top of it, right?
That is correct. This has a very fixed compositions, and there is an improvisation aspect which is there both in jazz and Indian classical. So that is brought into this. Yes, that's correct.
If I were to close my eyes and listen to jazz music or Indian classical music, often there's a sense of space that it's creating, whether it's a visual image of a space or a concept of space or a sound of space. So can you talk a little bit about maybe how, is there such a connection in the world of geometry as well, creating a space through mathematics and then maybe creating a space through music?
That is a very good question, but let me be a little more technical here. So this new music, as for lack of a better word, that we are doing, I can translate back those compositions back to geometry. Remember, I have some kind of a dictionary. So it gives some kind of a musical structure. And this is evolving into a concept of a soundscape, a new soundscape or a musical space. Actually, this incorporates both Indian classical, Western, as well as the new music. I'm working on it. Right now, this is in the works. So the concept of a musical space, which is actually expressed in precise mathematical terms, called category theory and more. So a space, yes, which can be rather described precisely in terms of mathematical terms. As far as musical imagery is concerned, I do not know what imagery people will get, because some of these imageries are cultural and civilizational. For me, it used to be that when I listen to Indian classical music, I get images of Indian temples, Taj Mahal, and things like that, or Indian landscape. And when I hear Western, I used to get Western landscapes and things. But these days, it's no longer true, actually. I find many landscapes in the West which are quite congruent to the music, Indian music I hear in my head, or Indian landscape which is perfectly fine listening to Bach. So I think this. So that means I've kind of come away from that cultural and civilizational anchor. I don't have it, I think. I can feel that this is kind of due to your upbringing. Music is a rather abstract entity. It depends what concrete object you want to associate with. That can wildly vary. So I don't know what image you get listening to Indian classical music. That is very personal, I think. There's no universal imagery that comes. The only feelings, the bodily feelings, maybe there is a certain universal aspect to the bodily feelings, like if you hear blues microtone, there is a certain pathos. Those things are correct, are perhaps, those emotions are universal, perhaps. But what imagery you get, I don't know. Depends on particular person, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear you say that it's changed for you, the imagery that you do see when listening to different types of music. As one listens to music, I think it is such a personal experience that imagery changes based on where one is in their life in that moment and, you know, sort of all the emotions involved. It's really interesting to hear that there is a sense of that maybe in mathematics for people who are not familiar with that world. There is a sense of space and feeling in the world of numbers as well.
Right. I mean, in mathematics, in physics, we have physical space, we have mathematical space, what is the concept of a space is a rather deep topic, but this music also yields a space, actually, which some people say that there is work of Grothendieck, which my construction is similar, close to that. I don't know how similar they are at a very technical level, but certainly what I'm doing is very mathematically consistent. Also, I wanted to tell you something here. You see, it is there's a certain analogy with economics here. You have all this globalization, you know, removing trade barriers and things like that. People talk about you can have a free trade and things like that. So it's kind of, there's a global things without boundaries, a global trade. So you can also talk, I don't know how far that is a success, but as far as I am concerned, there's also a globalization of musical consciousness. You know, it's no longer a regional or geographic. It is across the world. So the music kind of gets integrated. And that kind of a musical globalization, musical consciousness, I think this new work with David kind of fits somewhere there. Kind of a more globalized vision, I think.
It does sound like a new musical soundscape that will be...
there's certainly new sounds, yes.
And it will be in performance on October 28th.
That is in Lawrence, correct.
In Lawrence, Kansas. I'm wondering if you will be performing any of these pieces with other ensembles, if this is something that can translate to other groups of musicians with different instruments and maybe going more into an experimental route.
Definitely, for example, one of the violins can be replaced sometimes with a guitar or a piano, for example. Guitar, definitely. Also, clarinet. It has already been done once. I have not dealt too much with musicians outside my quartet. I have done some with guitar on a more personal level, and on a performance I've done with the clarinet. It does go well, yes.
I want to know more about your jazz influences, or at least what jazz you listened to when you were exposed to that world and found it to resonate with you. So can you tell us about a few maybe jazz musicians or records that have been influential?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, David Balakrishnan is one influence, definitely. That's among contemporary musicians. But my thing is more closer to John Coltrane.
Yeah, and talk about creating space. That's definitely...
Yeah, definitely. And people do compare some of the things I'm doing to the way he was approaching. David, in fact, has set up some kind of a parallel between Coltrane's and my system, actually.
It would be great to have a listening party where your music is listened to and then Coltrane is listened to.
Yeah, he's a really a very remarkable musical genius, Coltrane. I mean, it's I am listening these days to jazz before him, and how after him it is kind of seems, at least to me, an outsider to that genre, radical. And there are also other musicians I listen to from older era, Charlie Parker. And there is a lady called Rosetta Tharpe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
An African-American musician, remarkable. She's such a great guitarist as well.
Indeed.
In 30s and 40s, actually. Yeah, Rosetta Tharpe, and I'm open to all kinds of music. And, of course, Western classical, very much.
We have a little bit of information about your influences, but can you tell us just a little bit about the school of violin that you come from and your strict training in that world?
Yes, it is called a Parur system of music. My teacher was one of the first students to come out of the school. In fact, one of the most senior, I would say. He learned from three great masters, their father and two sons. He learned from all three of them, my teacher H.K.N. Murthy. The senior most guru of his name is Sundaram Iyer, a genius who integrated in a serious sense the North and South Indian systems, as I would call it. He essentially, by going to the roots of the Indian classical music itself, which did not have any dichotomies as he saw it. They have the same roots, North Indian system and South Indian systems, and they went back to that roots. In some sense, I do the same thing, actually. Encompassing other paradigms like Western jazz, blues, and Western classical and Indian. It certainly strongly has a philosophical influence by the approach there of my school when they're integrating North and South. And my teacher's other two illustrious teachers are M.S. Ananthraman. He's just passed away at age 94, I think. And the youngest in that line of that among my teachers, gurus, teachers, his name is M.S. Gopalakrishnan. He is considered one of the greatest Indian musicians. He's the only person who has mastered both North and South Indian systems. He can play very deep inner regions of North Indian system, deep in the orthodox regions of South Indian systems, and he can do his own school system, which is integration, and he is one of the greatest influences on all of us, and especially on me, through my teacher. Yeah, and I am also writing his biography, his name M.S. Gopalakrishnan. In fact, when Yehudi Menuhin heard him in 1951, I think he was so overwhelmed by that. He says that I have never seen this kind of violin playing in all of my travels. That is MSG, as we call him.
You come from a long line of teachers and teachers' teachers. There's this ancestry of musical talent and heritage. Will you be teaching your new compositions and this new syntax and this very new music to students? Are you planning on continuing onward from here?
Yeah, the issue with this is I have a few students. First, they should be really solid in either one of the two systems, actually, West and Eastern systems, one of them at least. But it'll be much nicer if they master both Western and Indian systems, which I have not done. I come from Indian system, and my system is rooted to go to West. So, I have now picked up some techniques and things like that. But I wonder how a new generation, you know, my son's generation, are a little older to him, he's only 8, who learn both systems, Western and Eastern, at equally competent levels. and how they view this. I think that is where my system, I think, will have more impact to the millennial or later generations, I think. And they will have their own system. But this geometry gives a system for them to do stuff, actually. It's a system, actually. So let us see.
I look forward to finding out more about this. And as you said, as the youth who are being trained in both systems age and mature, it'd be interesting to see how they can influence what you've created so far and build on it.
Yeah, because these days the kids are really globalized in their mind. You know, they see less dichotomies of East and West than even my generation. My generation already, there was some move towards the integration. But they, you know, they will be learning West and they will be learning Indian classical, maybe Japanese, I mean China, Japanese music, traditional music. I don't know that at all, but Indian classical system and Western classical system and jazz, they're deep systems. And there's all this, and then there's blues. So they will be exposed to all of this in almost equal terms. And they would have learned technically deeply how to read Western classical music, how to do Indian system. So I think they will be viewing music quite differently, I think.
Yeah, it may even change the definition of music as we know it. There's a transcendence quality to it.
Correct. That is the idea here, yes.
Yeah, very exciting. The ensemble is the Purna Loka Ensemble. It's a collaborative effort between Purna Prajna Bangare and David Balakrishnan, who's a multi-Grammy Award-winning Turtle Island Quartet founder of that ensemble. And joining them will be Jeff Harshberger on bass and Amit Kavthakar on tabla. And he's coming in from Boston. So thank you so much, Purna. Is there anything that we left out that you'd like to share with our listeners before we...
Just one small technical detail. The concert is at 2 o'clock on October 28th. It's not evening. 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, it's an afternoon concert. Okay, so 2 p.m. And more information about it is linked to our website, and you can find out more about it by also going to the LEED Center's website, which is lied.ku.edu. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to future efforts and future conversations.
Thank you, Neely. It's always a pleasure talking to you.